Welcome to the Everything Is Earned podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Tim, your co-host.
And we're going to break down everything happening in your Cleveland sports world. And we're back at it. We had a little bit of a holiday break, a little bit of a recovery break.
A little bit of a holiday illness.
We're back and going. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I know the Browns have been on everybody's mind recently here. And you know, we're staring down the barrel of the Cardinals.
The playoffs, the end of the season, the Cardinals, Freddie Kitchens.
The rumors.
OBJ.
I don't know.
There's a lot to stare at.
Kareem Hunt. There's things happening, and there's pieces that are going to be moving rather quickly once the season finishes
in
multiple
sports.
Yeah, in multiple sports. But let's address the Browns first. I want to talk about percentage chance that we make the playoffs. What percent chance do you think we're going to make the playoffs?
Am I mentioning this as a optimist or a Browns fan or a fan of football?
Be a fan. Be a Browns fan for a minute.
I want to say 60% chance. I'm not very confident that one.
60 is above. That's not a glass half full.
I'm not very confident in our ability to beat Baltimore. But based off what I saw early on in the season with our ability to like be gritty, even though our game plan is absolutely terrible, gives me hope that we can grind out that. And we did take it to them in the first time around. So there might be a little bit of something in the back of Baltimore's mind saying, hey, can we beat these guys?
Well, they haven't lost a game since they played us. Well, so there's that.
Well, made it twice.
Yeah, that'd be really great. What a weird outlier that would be. Would you be happy with the season if we missed the playoffs but we beat Baltimore twice?
Would that overcome all your frustrations with Freddie and OBJ and
no.
And all the Miles Garrett stuff?
No.
If we beat Baltimore, somehow wound up in the playoffs?
I think we can wind up in the playoffs, but like I have a really hard time putting a percentage chance on it because now I'm a Browns fan. I'm telling you, it's a hard question. I wasn't giving you a softball. I wasn't like, hey Tim, give it your best guess. I was like, hey, this is not an easy question to answer because the Browns have to rely on help from other teams right now,
which is always the best when you have to rely on different teams, different professional sports teams to help them out. But, hey, hi, buddy. I need. I'm really pulling for you guys right now. I know we played each other early on, but now I'm rooting for you. It's kind of a weird feeling.
For example, we want the Titans to win now.
Yeah, after they destroyed us week one.
And their superstar quarterback, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. That's just funny to me, because we knew Marcus Mariota wasn't the guy.
He had 4 touchdowns and 391 yards last week against the Raiders.
If you guys remember, before he went down with that crazy injury over in Miami, he started to ball out and figure things out. And he's been struggling to get 100%. And shake off that rust since then, and now we finally had that opportunity in Tennessee, and Titan fans are realizing, you actually do have weapons. This much is nailed over with trash.
I just want to ask, Jarvis, what he thought of Tannehill, like in a really honest sense. I think he'd give us an opinion.
Good idea.
That we wouldn't expect. I'm gonna tweet at him. I'm gonna see what happens. I'm gonna say, hey Jarvis, what do you think about Ryan Tannehill? Because he's balling out down there. I don't know. Anyways, so the Browns could make the playoffs, but they need the Titans to win. They need the Steelers to beat the Bills.
Yeah.
No?
No, they need
someone to lose.
They need the Buffalo, I think, to beat the Steelers.
Yes, Buffalo needs to beat the Steelers. You're right about that. Let me reference my
And they need Tennessee to win 2 out of the last 3 games.
Yeah, so
if not, they need a whole bunch of other crap to happen.
Yeah, it always gets really dicey.
Yeah, the best chance is I think
we just need us to win out and Titans beat the Texans twice.
Yes, which is doable considering how they've been playing lately.
That team's kind of woo.
The Texans are a good team. So we'll see how that shapes down. So I wouldn't be surprised either way. I think if it shapes out, if the Houston Texans win one of those games and eliminate the Browns from playoff contention, or you have Tennessee come out hot and giving the Bonds a chance to slip into the playoffs.
Yeah. Here's a question I have for you. As much as like Freddie talked about like not having leaks and crap in the off season, do you feel like
there's been leaks throughout the entire season? And he just mentioned how they have a pretty good rap on the locker room, and which I thought was hilarious.
And they ignore the outside noise. I mean, the only thing that's been happening have they really is noise. It's only been noise.
It's only been noise.
It's been like 10% football, 90% noise.
You've gotten crap from all the NFL and ESPN analysts. You have Baker snapping back at Rex Ryan. Like you have Baker like literally calling out reporters, calling out Grossi like mid press conference. just a whole bunch of this noise.
Jeez, and Tony.
Every other game early on in the season, it sounded like Baker was just making it a point to be like. Like, I'm not to let the haters get the best of me or the doubters. Like, I'll thrive off this.
He's playing better football.
He is, but, like, I don't care about that.
Can I say something? I expected him to go down and get the tying touchdown versus the Steelers, and he disappointed me.
I think the Browns as a team disappointed us.
I think
you had a third-string quarterback and Mike Tomlin out-coach you and out-game-plan you. And you bring up a good point, I think, about the running game.
Oh, thank you.
About the second half there.
Yeah, we only had, what, 6 rush attempts the whole second half against the Steelers?
Yeah, and 5 in one possession. So you had 1 rushing attempt, and the other, what, 5 or 6 possessions we had in the second half?
That's upsetting. The other thing that's kind of upsetting is, if you watch the Cincinnati game, it was close to zero fun. But what happened was, they ignored Chubb and Hunt again. They like got them
against a
going.
Bad team. That's a bad team. That's just awful. Like you
it's
need
not a bad team. The worst rushing defense in the NFL. Like that tells you Freddie has such an itch to throw passes that he can't even read a simple like fact sheet that says this team can't stop this.
Analytics are important.
Like play.
They're not nearly as important.
It wasn't even
in football.
Analytics. It was a basic stat that anyone can pick up and go, oh. Run the ball versus Cincinnati, and Freddie was like, "Nah, we're gonna do it. We're gonna throw them off their game."
But I'm taking one step further. As in, like with football, analysts don't play nearly as much of a factor. We saw that with the old regime with Paul DePoster and stuff like that.
Depossessa. Podesta.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it helped the whole Pan situation. It's De Podesta.
And Pan
with an M.
Two N's.
Anyways, you were saying?
I was saying that they tried to do a money ball like scenario with all the college stats.
Pause though.
And all the awards in college didn't work out. But you still need to follow some. There's some like true.
They did do the contract flip. They did the NBA contract flip, but they got Brock Osweiler, and the pick that ended up being Nick Chubb.
That was
pretty slick.
Do you hate that regime or Paul? Yeah, why would say you left?
I just
lost name more.
They didn't add any talent. They knew how to tear it down though. Like I think anybody can tear it down though. They just be like.
You just look at numbers.
Give me picks and get rid of this player, and he's no good. Like he's a budget cutter. He just came in and slashed the budget. He was like,
"You're all amazing. You're all
fired." Yes. Basically, he just gave him the old alley-oop Parks and Rec treatment.
But you have to give him some kind of points. All right, that like he could have been way worse. There's plenty of franchises that don't do a good job of tearing down or cutting veteran players when you need to.
Yeah, he did give John Dorsey a ton of assets to work with and a lot of cap room. And then John Dorsey did a pretty decent job drafting, and he's picked up some nice pieces along the way. You know, and you're not going to hit on every pick, you're not going to hit on every free agent, but Dorsey's done pretty well.
Oh, when you do hit on your picks, you trade them away for next to nothing because your coordinators don't know how to use your personnel. I'm talking about you, Jannard Avery. I hope you're doing well in Philly.
Yeah, we could have used Jannard Avery a couple weeks ago.
Oh, you mean when we waived Chris Smith, and then when Olivia Vernon has been injured for most of the season?
I don't know, man. Here's another point I want to make.
Chad Thomas has been a question mark since
you
drafted him.
Do you believe the Browns roster is supremely talented, or do you believe that they have a lot of like upfront like faces, and then there's people the people behind those like the main superstars are not that good.
I think it's a combination of your players letting you down, and the coaches not utilizing the personnel in a way that's most effective and not getting the most out of your players.
Like, do you think the Browns lack depth?
As we've seen in multiple sports, coaching plays a huge factor. When you have an elite or better than average coach, you can make up for a lot of things when you lack talent with coaching and good scheme and outsmarting your opponent. And I think Freddie and his coaching staff, and Steve Wilkes is someone who's been under the radar, hasn't got much heat lately, this season, which he should, pretty much, I feel like, some of the least production from an NFL team from your talent that you have on your roster.
I think the Browns defense has been a huge disappointment. All they did is hype them up in the preseason,
You're misusing players, and you're not using them at the right times throughout the game. I feel like you might be gassing players, I've been saying all season, the 4-2-5 scheme doesn't work with his personnel.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'll tell you right now.
It needs to be a hybrid.
There's some changes coming.
Your base defense needs to be a 4-3 / whatever your 4-2-5 is.
I think that Dorsey's going to give Freddie another year, to be honest with you, which kind of disappoints me. But
Does he give him another year if you went out the rest of the year but you missed the playoffs? You probably do.
9-7 is the best season they've had since 2010 or something like that.
2007.
Yeah. Here's the question I have for you now. So
if we get more than 7 wins, yeah, because it was 2014 where we went 7-8-1, with that awesome year where we went 7-3, and then Brian Hoyer,
and Johnny Manziel
together decided to go what.
0-5-1? Oh, yeah, it was bad, man. Like, 0-5 or something.
To push us out of the playoffs. You had to try to not get the wild card spot.
Remember when we lost to Andrew Luck? When we were up, like, we had like 5 turnovers.
Brian Hoyer did the shuffle pass to the flats.
We had five.
No, that was a Troy game.
We had 5 turnovers that game. And we had and Justin Gilbert got a pick 6 against the Colts that day. You and I were at the game. It popped up in my timeout last week. I almost tweeted about it, but then I was like, no, this is too depressing.
Yeah, there's too many depressing Browns moments.
Okay, on the flip side, I was thinking today out loud, and I was kind of asking a couple people, do we think the Browns are kind of like the 2016 Cavs?
Oh, we talked about the Philadelphia Eagles. Was that the 20?
Or the Eagles,
Was that the 2014, 2015?
Shoot, the Eagles.
We signed all this load of talent on the defensive end. They had all the hype on the offensive end.
No, not the dream team that didn't make the playoffs. That went like 7 and something.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the 2016 Cavs. Now, hear me out for this little...
2016 Cavs.
Yeah, the 2015... The
championship winning...
Or the 2017... The championship winning Cavs. Listen to me for a second. I'm stretching.
Whoa.
Listen to me for a second. The 2016 Cavs had almost zero interest in playing the regular season. We'd like wake up one day and like, all right, Cavs game tonight, and we're playing like the bottom of the barrel teams like Orlando and Phoenix, and we take them into the last 2 minutes and barely win these games because we didn't think they were up to our talent. I think the Browns are very similar like that. But here's my point where I think if the Browns sneak into the playoffs, I think you raise the level of intensity. And I think the Browns team, especially guys like Odell and Jarvis, and some of the guys on defense like Joe Schobert and those guys kind of raise their level of play to where you could win a wild card game. Now this might be fandom.
Oh, I believe we could win a wild card game.
But I think the Browns have treated the regular season like they were the 2016 Cavs. They just thought they could flip the switch, walk in, and the talent would win out.
I think it hasn't. I think there are 3 or 4 main differences there. One, basketball is a completely different game than football, and you also don't have a prime Tom Brady to turn it on and be extremely dominant.
Yeah, Tom Brady. At any moment. Tom Brady can flip it on.
Two. I lost two.
Because two.
Because one was just so convincing that I forgot about two. Two, you have the 2016 Cavs, they flipped it on at times into a regular season and showed dominance. It just wasn't consistent on a night-to-night basis. When they had to, they were explosive, and the offense was incredible that year. The Browns' offense was supposed to be incredible, and it has been wildly disappointing all season.
But look at Chubb. Chubb's been incredible. Chubb's been incredible.
Okay, but what does that say about your coaching staff? They don't understand what they have.
Help me make my analogy work, Tim. Chubb's been awesome. He's been outstanding. And Joel Petonio, Browns offensive lineman, said that he works out with Chubb every day, and Chubb even hasn't mentioned the rushing title. And he's on pace to freaking win it.
I expect nothing less than the Chubb. He's an absolute animal.
Dude puts a hard hat on and goes to work.
He just crushes it in every facet.
I got a quick update for you.
He's like the Walter Payton player of the year that you've heard in the 90s or 2000s. And you don't hear much about him other than him, just his production on the field and how great of a teammate he is.
I asked what which running back is better, Nick Chubb or Saquon Barkley. Guess what Twitter said?
Overwhelmingly,
93% of people at this point of the poll has said Nick Chubb over Saquon Barkley. We asked the same poll last year, and I believe
it was a dominant.
It was a dominating for Saquon. I want to say it was like 70-30. Like, the Chubb fans were out there supporting, but like, it was Saquon like big time.
I just
what a difference a year makes.
I just looked at the Nick Chubb situation and such a bigger picture with him dominating the way he should. It should not even be a thought to have him as your main. Your primary way of offense, a running offense, and you should have a pretty good passing game because of it. But for whatever reason, Freddie can't have his passing offense benefit from how dominant Chubb has been all season.
You need to run play actions. What you need to run?
Yeah, all season long. Anytime you just do run it,
lots of play action.
I've been saying it all year.
Greg Robinson's a garbage left tackle.
Oh, he is.
He's a dumpster fire. Like. First thing that Dorsey has to do is draft a left tackle.
And Hubbard. Have you seen Hubbard? He can't. He allows every edge rusher to get around him so quickly. And then I don't think Baker's done a great job of stepping into the pocket because he doesn't trust his line, obviously.
When he steps up, he does Baker plays really well.
Yeah, when he steps up into the pocket.
I'm not going to blame him. He got his hand hurt last against the Steelers.
There's been a lot of adversity.
He was on the run that game.
For the entire first half of the season. But yeah, I've been saying all season we should be like the 2017-2018 LA Rams. And what I've compared
blocking.
And I think over the last few weeks you've seen, I don't know.
That's what coaching will do.
Probably
not
the last few weeks. Probably all season.
It happened.
Yeah. Probably all season. You've heard analysts, you've heard reporters, on everywhere, ESPN, NFL, all that stuff, on how the Browns situation. Yeah.
NBC.
This Browns team wasn't nearly as enticing, as appealing as it initially came out to be. And I call bullcrap.
Okay, real quick, I was just trying to make fun of all the different news networks you're making fun of, and you just kept on with your serious point. So
yeah.
credit to you for not letting my joke take over.
Locked in. Yeah, absolutely.
But you're right, though. I don't think it's the fact that the Browns were overhyped. I think that our coaching has been underwhelming.
It's the lack. You've missed opportunity. There's an opportunity there, and you've missed it.
Well, we talk about these windows, and this is a window So what happens now? If you miss the playoffs, that's a year of playoff experience you missed.
Yeah, if you...
Then next year, it's Baker's first playoff experience. And then it's your first playoff experience. Do you expect to make a Super Bowl run on your first playoff experience?
Nope.
Probably not. So then you're looking at two more years. So you're looking at two more years before you consider making a deep run. And by that time, you're extending contracts and you're probably losing some talent. So...
You're having to maneuver your talent. And trade away pieces in order to
I'll tell you retain. Who I'm not resigning. right now is
Demarius
Randle. He's gone. Demarius Randle's gone.
Well, they had that stint.
He made that real clear.
Over in Pittsburgh. Well, he didn't travel with the team.
No, he missed a practice.
It was kind of shady what actually happened.
I think he missed a practice.
Probably what happened.
Yeah, and so okay, like cool. Don't be here. Don't play on the team.
I think he's one of those players.
Red Wine played really well last week. Was FYI.
Yeah, I think the speed. Future. I think the speed is finally slowing down for him. But I think Randle's one of those players who who makes poor decisions and lets like his frustration build into unprofessionalism.
He plays emotional. He's an emotional player.
That's fine when it's on a field, but when it starts creeping in to off the field like activities, that's when it becomes an issue.
I can agree with you on that, and I'll ask you this now: Red Wine, I think, is going to be the future at that position.
You need to sign a veteran in the free agency.
Yeah.
To matter.
Do you remember? Dante Whitner.
Yeah, he was awesome. We talked about Dante Whitner a couple months ago.
For a little bit.
The tip drill, connection he had with Tashaun Gibson.
I like Tashaun Gibson.
That was so much fun.
I enjoyed that.
That defense was so opportunistic. That secondary.
They had that one flash in the pan year where we put a lot of money out there. We signed Paul Kruger to too much money. We signed Dante Whitner. And who else did we sign in that sweep of like
we still had Phil Taylor. We still had
big boy Phil Taylor, man. And then we had Hayden still too.
We still had Hayden.
Joe Hayden was still out there playing.
There was one other big guy. Oh, we had Jamie Collins. We signed Jamie Collins, didn't we?
No.
Is that before?
No. This is way before that. DeQuell Jackson at the linebacker position. Yeah,
yeah. And then like a year later, we realized.
Cameron Wimbley.
I guarantee that was before.
No, I think we had Cam Wimbley still.
No, we left him pretty early on. It was like 08, 09.
No, we had
that DeQuell Jackson.
That was like Dante Cam Wimbley year three.
That was like 2012, 2013. That was right before the Brian Hoyer stretch.
No, I think that was during that stretch, bro.
It could have been, but I'm saying...
I think it was during that stretch.
But I'm saying... Because
that defense got after it, man. No, it was Leonard. Remember Leonard? The safety.
The white boy.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah, he was like in Baltimore or something.
Oh, man, what's that guy's name? What's the... I gotta find his name. What's his first name?
Well, we had that special teams player. It was like Vallone or whatever, who broke out.
He was
Johnny or something. I'm blanking on it.
Jim Leonard? Was it Jim Leonard?
I think it was Jim Leonard, yeah. It was a white boy.
Yeah,
safety.
He played Buffalo first. Jim Leonard, man. Oh, I liked him a lot.
He reminded me of like a Whittle.
Our punt returner for a minute too, because we couldn't find a punt returner.
No one had hands. Nobody had hands. Yeah, yeah. You had Greg Little Bat there trying to catch things. This was one hand.
Greg Little wasn't on that squad.
He totally was.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, we were like, oh man, he's a playmaker, and we realized he was just like.
We try to justify Greg Little was going to pull it together every year
because he's so athletic. We wanted him to succeed so badly.
It's like Braylon Edwards. We wanted Braylon Edwards to succeed.
His neck was so huge. You're like, there's no way he can't be bad. No, Greg Little.
Oh, really?
He's like, no way he can be bad. Look at his neck. He has to have strong hands. Like
He must be good.
And then he had strong hands, but it must have been too strong, and they were like cinder blots. I mean, he didn't catch anything.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a real problem. So,
and on that time, it was a little bit before. It was like 11, 12. When we had that Peyton Hillis year. He was the Madden Cup of the year, and he had like 1,500 all-purpose yards.
Then we didn't re-sign him, and it wasn't a bad thing.
Because he got a huge contract.
No, he got no contract.
Did he?
No, he pretty much fell out of the league, bro.
That was
he ended up signing for like a little tiny deal, and like pretty much fell out of the league. He had a cold and missed a game. Remember that?
I think he had some mental stuff.
But he was probably banged up to crap because of the season before, and they didn't like. They like he kept putting his body in the line. They wouldn't give him like an extension.
Oh yeah, I love those mishandling of these injuries.
Yeah, and we had that rash of like. Ringworm or something awful.
No. It was turf toe and like athlete foot.
No, it was turf. It was It was something worse. It was like a. It was like a
staff infection.
Staff infections. It was like the Browns facility was just covered in staff, and everyone was just licking everything and hugging each other and just wiping their junk off on things.
I was pretty young at that point, and I'm like, what kind of shitty staff do we have that they keep on
getting infections?
Like infecting our players. I'm like, get a new staff, man. Like, it's not that hard.
It's a different type of infection.
But yeah, like, we had Eilert Steinbach, like, ruined, like, his career got ruined with, like, that staff infection.
Yeah.
He was never the same. You had, what was it,
the Charles Bentley, baby?
Something Stanley.
The Charles Bentley.
Yeah, yeah, it's Stanley. You had Bentley, and you had
Bentley was the big one because he was a big free agent signing.
Dude, that line was
at training camp.
That line was absolutely amazing. You had Joe Thomas. You had Eilert Steinbach to left guard. Then you had Bentley in the center. That's a Pro Bowl left side.
They had the most ridiculous offensive line. The Browns for a long time had a sick offensive line.
Had a stellar offensive line.
And we put no one behind the line. So Thomas is like, throw the ball.
Hey.
Please throw the ball. He's like, I can only hold him for so long. Please throw the ball. And he's like, there's Brian Hoyer just patting the ball repeatedly, like just shifting, patting.
I think everyone.
And then Andrew Hopkins is wide open, and then he underthrew him by 16 yards and had to dive and catch the ball still, and somehow they still won the game.
Yeah, that's where he's a wide open touchdown.
It's versus the Saints, yeah.
That was always the most upsetting. You had Andrew Hawkins, just a straight boner on those play actions, and Brian Hoyer just tapped the ball repeatedly and then underthrew him and threw a giant just dots up in the air.
On the plus side, I do love what Andrew Hawkins and Joe Thomas are doing now in their broadcast, like podcasts, like
it's a lot of fun.
Just careers. It's just fun. They just bring a lot of a nice flavor to it.
But you guys remember that the white tackle on that cellular line?
Oh, who was it?
I think it was Floyd Womack.
Womack? Oh, I remember Womack.
I think it was Floyd Womack. That big boy on that white tackle.
He's a big dude. Who is our right guard?
I think it was Stanley.
What's his face? Was it Schwartz?
That was before his time.
I think it was Mitchell Schwartz, because we developed that boy.
No, that was before the time.
Was his brother Greg Schwartz? I think it was Mitchell Schwartz.
Mitchell Schwartz is the
I
one that we drafted.
I think it was Mitchell Schwartz, bro. For real.
Uh-huh.
Because he was the same time we had Alex Mack.
That was before the time.
No, I see. Alex Mack came right after the Charles Bentley season.
Yeah, because
they needed to replace that line with Alex Mack and Joe Thomas and Mitchell Schwartz was ridiculous.
Okay, I think it might have been the year after, but he definitely wasn't in that
line. We had an all-pro line for like three Steinbach. Or four seasons, and it was I think Steinbach was there, bro.
Mm-mm. Because he fell off.
We put some money on the line.
His career, fell off. But he played in, maybe one or two other teams and, quickly retired.
I don't know, buddy. I don't know, man. I'm not sure. Let me ask you last question. Did the Browns make the playoffs, yes or no?
I'm going to say no. Okay. I'm gonna say the end of the season is going to be just as disappointing as all the in-between stuff this season.
Thanks for all that. I'm going to say yes, because I have faith that Ryan Tannehill and the boys are going to make it happen.
Just blind faith.
I don't need facts, Tim. I need blind faith.
Blind faith.
I've been a Browns fan all my damn life. And if I think the Browns are going to make it, then they're going to make it, man. Because this time it's different. This time we have Baker Mayfield,
new year, man.
And Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and Nick Chubb. Chubb's the X Factor. The Browns are going to make it. Teams are banged up, bro. It's going to happen.
You heard it here first. That is the most Cleveland answer
Hunter
you can give.
Hunter Henry and Ryan Tannehill are going to take it to the Texans. We're going to be fine. We're going to have a good opportunity. It's just a matter of winning now.
I have to bring you back to baseline.
I don't want your baselines. Next topic. We're going to talk about the Cavs real quick.
All the hype.
The Cavs are going to make some trades, and they're going to come up real quick here. The 15th is the day in which players who signed free agent contracts this past summer, can get traded. So that brings a whole bunch of more players on the board. It's going to be lovely. The Cavs are likely going to gut most of this team. It's going to be real interesting because I think the only players I'm keeping that I want to keep right now, I'll list them off for you right now. I'm going to keep Kevin Porter Jr. because he has the highest ceiling of any Cavs.
Who are your non-tradables at this point?
Non-tradables, it's Kevin Porter Jr. It's Darius Garland. It's honestly, I want to keep Hansen. Like,
is there more than five?
Kevin Porter Jr.
Is there more than five people on this roster that you wouldn't trade? If the price is right.
No, I'm keeping only Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland pretty much at this point.
And Dylan Windler.
And Windler.
You're forgetting about the
he hasn't played yet.
You're forgetting about the strappy the left-hander.
I like Windler a lot. He's a good player. I'm gonna say he's gonna be a long-time NBA player if he can be healthy.
I think
he's got a real.
He has all nice, the intangibles with
nice basketball game, real nice mature game to him.
Yeah, he is about European game. He just plays basketball the right way, and you'll hear the announcers repeatedly say that.
Yeah, don't worry. Wait till Austin Carr gets a hold of that phrase. He'd be like, he just plays the right way. Just right down, up and down Euclid.
And him and Campy Russell will talk about how he dribbles the least, which is their favorite thing to talk about. And how that directly attributes to wins.
I told somebody today that I think Windler can be like a Joe Ingles type, and they asked if I was high. And I said, no, you just haven't watched Dylan Windler enough to know his potential.
It's the eye test. People...
Bro, the eye test in basketball means more than the eye test probably in any other sport. I promise you that. Like,
It's the most obvious. And people can bring up facts or how people are currently playing or give me games of how they just did, and I can always just go back to the eye test and give you examples. Like, if you bring up Darius Garland, how he struggled, how he hasn't made open shots, how he's been indecisive on what shots to take, and he's been very turnover prone on what windows are open, then I'll say, yes, I agree on all the things, but I will raise you a scenario and say he'll have a type of a season, not the level of, but Trae Young at the second half of the season, where he start to figure it out, and then his strong suits, his passing, and his shooting ability will start to come out as the game slows down.
Remember, he only played 5 college games. So basically, he played high school ball, played 5 college games, and now he's in the NBA.
In kind of a smaller school in Vanderbilt.
Right. So he's ultra-talented, and it's a big leap to make, and I think what you're going to see is that you're going to see him start to level out here. And what I can tell you from the eye test from Darius Garland is that the kid can play basketball. He doesn't lack the ball handling. He doesn't lack the passing ability. He doesn't lack the shooting ability. He has the IQ. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And it takes a little bit to do in the NBA, especially when you're making that kind of a leap. What I will tell you is, and how we can like say the eye test is super important, is you can see the difference between a player that could be a starter in this league or a bench player or out the league. Like, it's really obvious because players...
Or just a respectable role player.
Players, like, once they... I think once you get to the NBA, you almost, like you very... that's pretty much, your baseline a lot of times. Like, you don't get to, like... You don't see players making giant jumps from when they hit the NBA to, like, where they are, like, 5 years down the road. Like, players pretty much are what they are. And the only thing that happens in between is whether or not they pick up the NBA style or not.
That, and I think they figure out, I think it's very vague, but they figure out how the NBA works, what they're allowed to take and what they're allowed to take from other teams in game, like how they, like, just what to do.
The flow of the game is different. It's different basketball.
If you remember,
NBA basketball is different than any type of basketball.
If you remember Ricky Rubio in Minnesota, he was a very crafty passer, but you can't say much more about that. Now in Phoenix, he's leading that young non-neutralist over in Phoenix into a potentially playoff year.
Yeah, but he's not a superstar. Ricky was not a superstar.
But no, he knows exactly what he does.
His role, and he's crafted out this play style that he can do in the NBA.
Right, and I've actually kept track of him this year, the Suns, and he's getting like buckets on offense that he's never got in his career because he's realizing that with the skill set he has, it opens up the ability to kind of be more of a scorer than he normally would be because he's such an unwilling passer.
Right,
that and people just learn his style of play, and then you have to account for what he does. And so when that happens, something else opens up, and that's something that Darius Garland is going to figure out. That these young players are going to figure out.
That's something that Kevin Porter Jr. hasn't figured out.
That Kevin Porter Jr. is going to figure out. And we talked about the intangibles, the stuff that we liked about Winland, the stuff that we liked about Garland. It's those reaction time and, like, your reaction off players doing things. So the more experience that you get off and seeing that from different players and different teams throughout the league, the more you can kind of develop your response to it. Because as a guard, you're taught to react and
take what the defense gives you.
Yeah, and be reactionary and take what the defense gives you and take up the space it gives you and kind of like play mind games with them and to get what you want.
Basketball is the ultimate chess game. It really is. It's the ultimate chess game. And it's great because if you have that IQ, you have a advantage on the court. Like, just because your play style, like, makes you a king, doesn't make you know
how
to...
Or your athletic ability.
Makes you a queen, doesn't allow you to move like that, because you have to have the athletic, you have to have the IQ. You can move all over the board as a queen, right, in chess, but if you don't know what to do with that queen and know how to move it...
Or use other players.
That could be the most, like, detrimental piece to you and open up your king. Yeah. Same way in basketball, you got to understand that you can have this athletic ability, but you have to have
all the
IQ and to put it together and to make the most of that. So I'll give you a scenario. I'll give you two things. I'll give you one positive, one negative. One positive that I see in the player we are the most frustrated with on a daily basis is Colin Sexton. His positive to me is he's developed that 8-foot teardrop shot. Because he was taking the ball and he was taking an extra dribble and getting blocked. He developed that. That's excellent. Because now
I think John Beilein
hits that teardrop with consistency now, which is excellent.
Yeah, I think John Beilein, I think he talked about his offense. He wants threes or he wants layups. So with Colin Sexton, he's like, all right, so I'm trying layups. And then with his athletic ability and kind of the lack of ability to fool defenders at this time in his career. He has to utilize his athletic ability, and Bidman and rim protectors know that he's going for layups. So then he had to adjust, and like you said, he developed that little 8-foot floater.
Here's my negative that he hasn't learned yet. I still see him all too often kill the flow of an offense and dribble a ball. Whether he dribbled the first 7 seconds, passed it off, got it right back, dribbled 7-8 more seconds left. Kills offensive possession. And the same token, when he does that, a lot of times what ends up happening is he'll ISO, he'll believe he has a step on a person, and then he'll dribble into a wall. And not do the teardrop that we just talked about he does so well, but he'll dribble into a wall believing he can sneak up a layup and gets blocked. He did that twice the other day versus Orlando in the most crucial time of the game, and it cost the Cavs the win. That's what I'm saying about Sexton that is annoying to me is that he's learned pieces, but some of the most glaringly obvious adjustments he can make, he still believes that he can get by with people with his raw athletic ability and isn't reading the court properly.
Well, or
reading the open passes properly, because in those plays, he had Jetty in the corner. Like, just like last night when we watched him against the Rockets.
Clarkson's
a great player, great scorer.
Do the same thing.
But he dribbled into a defender and was trying to force up a little fadeaway. And he had Kevin Porter Jr., who was having a career night, open for three, and ignored him. That's just some of the stuff you can't have at the NBA level, especially when it comes down to execution at the end of ball games. And with a young team like the Cavs, they haven't quite figured that out yet. And my worry is that I've watched Colin Sexton last year, watched him this year, and I've established through the eye test and through the game and the film we've watched and say he doesn't have the ability to make those adjustments. It's not going to happen for him. So he is going to be a Dennis Schroeder off-the-bench type of point guard. And now that we've had this emergence of Kevin Porter Jr., I fully believe that the Cavs see him as a starting two. And it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And if we make some trades here, he could very well be starting for the Cavs, you know, in a few short weeks.
I think you made a ton of points that I was going to hit on. I think one thing that's important that you mentioned I want to hit on a little bit more is you mentioned that he wants to just use his raw athletic ability. And that worked for him in college. That worked for a lot of players, regardless of what sport, in college, because they're an elite athlete in their respective teams and in college. But when it comes down to the NBA, you literally have those same best players, those same best athletes from every year for the last 15, 20 years on the best teams in the nation from those colleges playing and being and getting better and better and becoming grown men in that league, and they've seen everything. So if you're Colin Sexton, your biggest advantage right now is your speed. Once you're in a half court scenario, that doesn't really benefit you that much. And we talked about, I think the biggest thing we talked about, the intangibles with Colin Sexton. I think at this point, he's a much more limited offensive player than he thinks he is. He thinks he's this 15-20 shots a night player who should be demanding of the primary
scoring option.
He's not. When you have one dribble move, and you have speed, and you don't have a step back shot, you can't really shoot off the dribble, and you're reliant
on backdown game.
Pits all the time. Yeah, you don't have the strength to be in the post or the game or the footwork right now. And I think everything with him is a little bit off. I think the important thing that before you start criticizing our opinion on Sexton is you need to watch solely him on offensive possessions.
I love doing that. That's a really fun exercise
that's
to
part
do
of the, in I, all of sports. I think that's a great way. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think that's a great way to develop your sense of the eye test. Start watching individual players and what they do for your possession. Because a lot of people have an incredible more amount of value than people peg them for or give them credit for, because they don't see all the little stuff. They all see the stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet.
Yeah, I agree with you there. That's a really fun way to watch sports. And if you don't get anything else out of this podcast today, try doing that in any sport you watch. Pick a player you like. Pick a player maybe you're annoyed with. Pick a player that you think would be interesting to watch
or might be really good in the future, and see how he develops by watching him in individual possessions, individual drives, or individual plays depending on what sport it is. And I think that's some of the most fun that
you can have watching sports.
That you can have in fandom is when you take one individual person and you see just the impact, and either mentally and see the progression that they're going through during that play, and you're saying, wow, that is incredible. That's why you can appreciate great players.
Like LeBron,
like Jordan, like Kobe, like Leonard, like Kawhi Leonard, like Paul George. All those players in the NFL, Tom Brady, Aaron Donald.
Watching Aaron Donald on a play-to-play basis is ridiculous.
Like, it's
the
insane.
The guy is an animal.
If you enjoy watching football, just watch solely him. I'm a Rams fan.
He blows up plays on every possession.
In 2017 and 2018, and if not, he draws penalties, which negates the entire play from the offense. He is by far, I think, the most valuable player, if we're not talking about quarterback.
He was the number one player in the NFL Top 100.
Yeah, this year. He was back-to-back defensive player of the year in 2017 and 2018. And the crazy thing about 2018 is on 72% of his snaps he played, and he played an incredibly high amount, he was double-teamed. And he had the most sacks in the league with like 22.5.
It's just silly stats.
From a nose tackle position.
This is unheard of.
This absolutely unheard of.
He wrecks game plans. He's a game plan wrecker. But yeah, do that. Isolate a player, watch them, see what happens. I wanted to just talk about LeBron for half a second because LeBron, we got to witness how great LeBron was because everyone was watching him and doing that isolated watch without even knowing it because he was such an amazing player.
Because he's a magnet to your eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but try that with a lesser player and see what you see. And I've been doing that with Kevin Porter Jr. for a little bit now, and I was not even surprised of last night's performance because I just knew once he had the confidence to start taking his shots and like was getting the ball in his positions that he could take over a game.
Well, I think he's starting to be a little bit more selfish because I think
you have to look around. You want Dellavedova shooting the three, or do you want your young, highest ceiling player to take the three?
Right, and I think that's what Jordan Clarkson. I think you've actually seen that from Kevin Love, where you've seen him. Where he could do a little handoff to Colin Sexton, and he defers, and it's kind of puts the ball on the opposite side of the floor because he knows he just kind of kills possessions a little bit.
The amount of times I've seen Kevin Love deny Colin Sexton a pass.
One of those little handoffs.
Is amazing.
In the offense. It's incredible. In the motion offense. Like,
but if honestly, you it play, happens it, so often.
But if you've played basketball, you might recognize that someone did that to you, or you might have done that, and if you're a basketball player that plays a little bit, I'm sure you've done that to a few players. I'm sure you've done that to a few people that you might be friends with, be like, eh, I know you're not that good at basketball, buddy. Like, I'm gonna give you a little fake, but it's gonna happen like about every time with me and you.
I'm gonna give Timmy a little credit here real quick. This is a real side note. Timmy and I play basketball, and we play in a couple of these rec leagues, and we had this crazy game the other day in our playoffs. We went to double overtime, but we had a regulation, like, the clock was going down. I think Timmy and I passed the ball back and forth to each other probably 3 or 4 times within, like, a 30-second, like, span.
Window.
Where he didn't get the look he wanted, so he passed it up. I didn't get the look I wanted, so I passed it up. And the ball kind of kept finding us. And at the end, I got the ball to Tim on a spot up, and he legitimately could have, like, taken the shot and hit it. But instead, he made a smarter play, put the ball down, and then whipped the ball over to me over his shoulder. And I was spotted up for a pick and pop three. And we ended up hitting and going to overtime. But it was just a little tiny piece where it was like, okay, like, if Timmy doesn't believe I can hit that shot, he's taking that shot. Taking that window. And, like, that's what happens when you have a bad roster, is you don't get that trust where Kevin Love's going to necessarily want to give that ball to Sexton because he doesn't believe he's going to, you know, convert on the other end.
I will give the guards this young tandem of Garland and Sexton some credit. At times they try to go later in a shot clock, and work the man, maybe switch and not a big man, and they try to work him real quick. They kind of lose the sense of rhythm. They kind of toss the ball back and hit the ball right back, and that's a great way to reset kind of like the possession for you. But sometimes you just, like, don't have a good feel for the ball. And then that quick pass back is so important to, like, just keep like, the sense of, like, touch on the basketball. And to have a good idea of a feel on the court and the basketball.
It's
just the little tiny things.
It's like a feel thing. It's honestly a feel thing. Like,
and that's a big thing with basketball.
Basketball is feel and rhythm a lot of feel and rhythm. And, like, you say, like, you hear announcers go, oh, that was a healthy shot. Oh, that was a rhythm shot. Because...
And you're not mad about the miss, but you're like, that's within the game plan. That's within right. the skill set. If they miss it, you still want them taking it, even though they miss it, to keep the confidence up. Because you're going to need them later on in the game. You're going to need them in the season. The integral part of the offense. And those little misses, those little turnovers, the, like, your mistakes, they happen. And you just move on from them.
Yeah, if you listen closely to basketball, if you ever get to a game where you listen to some stuff on the broadcast, they'll say things like, "Oh, that was a good shot." Like, "Oh, that's the right idea." Like, you get those things because in basketball, it's not the same as other sports where like if you're turning the right wheels and you're doing the right things, it's gonna click. You're gonna get it. And, like,
sometimes they have bad nights.
I'm okay with a missed shot if it's the right shot. I'm okay with a turnover if it was the right idea
or the right decision.
And you recognize how to correct it next time.
If it was the right decision, but maybe you
or deflected pass. Like, that's the right idea.
Yeah,
like,
but the right decision.
I love that.
But maybe a little bit late. Maybe if you saw him a little bit earlier. Maybe your teammate say, "Hey, check out this little nuance that I've noticed in the game."
You bounce it instead of lobbing it in there.
Yeah, yeah. Some shooters just shoot better off chest passes than bounce off the bounce. I think statistically, like, passing into the shooting pocket and knowing the shooting pocket, that's something, actually, I'm going to bring back to LeBron a little bit, that he does so well, and that why elite shooters do such a great job with LeBron, because LeBron he'll learn what your shooting pocket is, where you start your shooting motion, and he'll put that and whip it into the perfect spot with so much space, like, almost all the time.
Is the difference between catching the ball, like, at your ankle, and catching the ball at your knee, and catching the ball in your shooting pocket?
It's all muscle memory.
It all feels different, and you have to correct your body to get to the right, like, stance to take your shot. Your accuracy is going down, and it's taking away from your shooting motion,
and
or it's reducing the time you have to get that shot
off. And it's a worse shot, too. The quality of shot is being downgraded by the pass that you're receiving.
That's why hesitant shooting is such a dangerous thing to do, because when you get the ball and you pump fake, and then you're like, oh, you need to fall for it, I'm going to take the shot anyways. That's such a hard thing to do, because now your rhythm is totally freaking off. And then you have to put yourself back into rhythm and then have the proper form to go into
rhythm
it.
Rhythm is such an important part of basketball.
That's why you're going to listen to Austin Carr next time you listen to the Cavs game. And he'll say, oh, it's good when Larry Nance shoots like confidently.
Decisively.
When he doesn't
We've been talking about this decisively.
It's perfect.
John Beilein talks about it.
When he's not shooting, when he's not pump faking and hesitating and jab stepping.
Indeed. I talked about that was one of my most frustrating things about Larry Nance. And since that, I think him and John Beilein have been working and about being decisive. And if you don't shoot it, shoot it. If you're trying to deceive the defense and think you're going to shoot it and drive by and try to make a play for the team, then do it. Just be decisive with your actions. And back, a little bit back to the whole muscle memory thing. The importance of putting the ball in that specific teammate's shooting pocket is how many times have you shot the ball from your shooting pocket, and how many times over the years in shoot-arounds, in pregame, have you caught the ball in your ankles and shot it? It is significantly less. So that we talked about
how repetition, man.
Repetition, muscle memory, and rhythm all play a factor. So all that plays a factor in your execution of how your teammates perform and what you can do. The little nuances that you can do as your teammate, as a playmaker, as a person with the ball, the player with the ball in your hands, that you can do, that affect the game on a whole other level you can't really see, or like, you're like, oh, why that guy missed his shot, or why hasn't he been shooting well? It is always these little nuances, that show up, and these young guys will start to figure it out. I think the players that have the intangibles, when they don't have the intangibles, you're missing it. I think you talk about these elite basketball IQ and like us, like a supreme like mindset. And we talked about players like Deion Waiters, Andrew Wiggins, who have all the talent, but there's something missing in their head that they just don't connect. I talked about Jamal Crawford being the one of those players under the radar where if he had the mentality all the time that he does when he gets hot sometimes, he could be a really great player, but it's very inconsistent. Even Lou Williams, if he had that killer mentality,
he's having a real good year.
He's been great for a long time now.
I don't think Lou Williams doesn't have a killer mentality. I think Lou Williams
he does.
He's averaging like 20.
As good an example. He's definitely a killer.
Lou's out here working, boy.
I backtracked on that.
Yeah, you should take that back. Yeah. All right, so we're gonna wrap this thing up here, but we want you guys to give us some questions. You can give us some feedback on the podcast, and then give it a little share with your friends, or even just share our social accounts, because we are honestly really passionate about making these episodes.
And we will continue to be here per no crazy illness.
Yeah, as long as people aren't getting bronchitis or pneumonias or ear infections, or
we'll be here.
Yeah.
Putting out content in various ways.
Yeah, just out here covering things for you guys and giving you the take that you're not getting from from your typical sports people.
Yeah, we like to look inside of why things are the way they are. And why things are dysfunctional, why they're a little bit off, or why things might be fine.
Honestly,
like, we've got to ride out a little bit.
Can I give you a little, quick little piece. Honestly, I think the Cavs have been worth watching this year. They were frustrating the last week and a half.
Oh, they've been frustrating all season. But they're still worth watching.
But I think like last night versus Houston was fun. I think we might get another fun stretch of basketball here.
But we saw some lineups start to work. The Cavs went on 24-0 run against the Houston Rockets.
Bench players.
Who are absolute like dynamite on offense. And
dynamite.
The line, huh? They're explosive on offense. They just put up points when, I mean, James Harden had the quietest 55 points you will ever hear. Or you will ever have. 55. This super quiet. He made every difficult contested shot. Kevin Porter Jr. I cannot wave about that kid enough. He just plays solid defense. He made some mistakes. He made some young mistakes.
Tune in for Kevin Porter.
He is.
Tune in for Darius Garland's development.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in for watching Wendler play. And a little bit of Henson action. I think Henson's worth watching, too.
Yeah,
he has a nice smooth touch
around the rim. I have some hot takes about Henson, but we'll leave that to Monday morning's episode. We have much to talk about the Cavs, especially with December 15th coming around, where I said that new wave of free agents.
Trades are happening, bro. It's going to happen.
We'll open up all kinds of new opportunities for teams and the management.
I got a quick hot take. Kevin Love will be on the Cavs the rest of the year. He's not getting traded.
I think he'll be here for another 3 or 4 years. But he does want to go to Portland. He has been upset with this young team early on. There's been a little bit of whispers about players not liking John Beilein and his offense.
One last thing.
I'll
take on Steven Adams and Chris Paul's contract.
And let Darius Garland learn from Chris Paul. I love that idea.
Yes, thank you. And let the big boys develop a little bit of Steve.
So yeah, we'll leave it at that. The Cavs are currently playing the Spurs, so we're gonna get into that and we're gonna cover that. But yeah, look for individual players. Pay attention to individual players during possessions, during drives, in various sports, whatever sport you enjoy.
Whatever floats your boat, really.
Whatever player you want. If you have a player you particularly don't like or really like and think he's going to be really good, you can start to see on a possession basis on how they're developing into that player. Or you think that a player that's not that very, very good, or overrated maybe.
Right.
But that about does it.
Does it? Is that it?
Yep, that's how we end up.
It's over. Thanks for listening.
We say our last word. There's a silent period, and then
your stereo turns on,
and it is a
little muffles.
Yeah.
No, my name is Mike,
and I'm the alpha host Tim, and as always here, everything in Cleveland is owned.
Ding 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 ding. You have the cough in there. That was perfectly timed. Huh? I didn't look at the cough in there because it was perfectly timed, though. It was like.